This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit. You've seen their teardowns all over the internet, the free repair guide for everything, and the ultimate marketplace for electronic tools and parts. For $5 off your purchase of $10 or more, go to iFixit.com/TWiT and enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout. Today on KNOWHOW,
Personal Security, Part 2.
Welcome to Know-How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballister.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And joining us today is a special guest. We've got, that's right, the newest member of the Twitch crew, Nog, also known as Nathan Olivares Giles.
Yeah, just like that.
That was pretty good.
Just like that.
Pretty good.
But
Nog's fine too.
Nog is okay as well. You're here because, well, you have a mind for security. You like maintaining your personal privacy.
I do. I firmly believe that privacy and security shouldn't be something that only people who can afford to spend extra should have. It should be a default on all the tech we have. It isn't, unfortunately, but there are a lot of things that we can do to protect ourselves and embrace privacy and security as much as possible. So I'm glad we're going to have this episode. I'm glad to be here taking part. I'll have some stuff to talk about with messaging apps later, two-factor, all the goodness that we got going on. Yeah, this is good stuff.
Well, that's going to be our focus because last week we had a little maker project. Our people love to put stuff together. So we took a Raspberry Pi 3, we installed Raspbian on it, and we installed a couple of packages that allowed it to be a Tor hotspot. In other words,
nice.
You plug it in and you're automatically on Tor. If you're connected to that Raspi, you will automatically be encrypted, which is nice, but people should know that personal security doesn't mean you have to make something. There are so many features that are baked into the products that we use every day that most of us just never even turn on. Not only that, most of us don't even know about.
Yeah, I mean, with all the current events and things that are going on right now, the silver lining is that it gives us a chance to kind of deep dive into it and learn how it works, why we should use it, and what are the best solutions for us.
Exactly.
Yeah, and this is stuff that people should really share with their friends and family as well, because, you know, I think there's an intimidation factor when it comes to all of these things that we're going to talk about. And you know, it can be kind of a pain in the butt at first. You're like, oh, I'm going to have to set up two-factor. I'm going to have to get these little codes. I'm going to have to enter that in every time. But once you get in the routine and once you get used to it and then you fully understand how valuable and important it is, it's going back isn't really an option. Yeah. And I hope that people spread the word.
Yeah, and all it takes really is for you to get into, say, like for my thing is going to be two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a pain probably for the first month. After that, you just go like, okay, yeah, I need my mobile phone or I need one of my pre-made PIN numbers.
Yeah.
That's going to become the regular way of doing things. And honestly, that should have been the regular way of doing things. We were just really lazy.
Yeah. And once you start doing it, it's easy. You just got to get into a routine. But do you want to start on it?
Yeah, let's kick it off. So what we're going to be talking about first is two-factor authentication, or actually it's MFA, multi-factor authentication. This is not a new idea. This is something that's been around since any sort of enterprise authentication. And the whole idea is a username and password is not great because most everyone knows everyone's username. I mean, like, for example, if I'm working at an enterprise, typically my username will be R. Ballister. Well, I can go down the directory list and I can figure out everyone's username from that. So it means I only need to guess their password. Well, passwords can be secure or insecure, but that's still only one thing that someone needs before they can take over your account.
Mm-hmm.
What MFA does is it combines the best of breed of security, and that's three things: something I know, something I have, and something I am. That would be the perfect security. So in other words, if I had a system that required a username, a password, a dongle, like something like those RSA keys that has a unique code that changes all the time, and say a fingerprint or a retina scan or a facial scan, then that's about as good as I can get for authentication. I want that. Now, we're not doing three-factor authentication. We're doing two-factor authentication. And we're doing it on a service that almost everybody uses, and that's Google.
Right. Even if you're not using Google, it's pretty similar on other other accounts and things.
Can I assume that both of you are using two-factor authentication?
Oh, yeah.
We have to here at work.
It's not really an option, but literally everywhere it's available, I have it turned on. Yeah. So basically that means everything but Amazon, I think.
Which was weird, right?
Yeah.
You start noticing that. Once you start turning on two-factor authentication, the sites that don't do it, you're like, get with it, man.
Yep.
Come on.
Yep.
What are you doing? Or at least, you know, the sites that allow me to use an authenticator that does two-factor authentication, that I'm okay with.
Yep.
Like if Amazon would allow me to lock it out so that you can't log in directly, you have to use like my Google login, I would actually be okay with that.
Yeah, that if they gave you the option, but they don't even do that. No. I mean, even Yahoo, which is notorious for honestly not being as careful with personal user data as they should be, so much so that it's impacted their sale to Verizon. Even they have two-factor authentication, and I pretty much only use it for Flickr and fantasy sports, and even it exists there. So there's really no excuse for a major tech company these days. I'm sorry, I got to hammer this, Amazon. There's no excuse. Bezos, get your stuff together. There's no excuse for them not to be offering that.
Yeah. Exactly. And like you said, we're actually relying on you because we want to get the word out. We're techies, and we get hurt when other people's accounts get hacked. That's a bad thing. That allows bad things to happen on the internet. So if you are a techie and you're watching this right now, even if you're saying, wow, this is the easiest thing ever, take the time to maybe recommend this to one of your relatives or one of your friends who doesn't turn on two-factor authentication so they can see how easy it is. Let's go ahead and jump in. Alex, if you go to my screen right now, so what we're going to do is we're going to go to Google. I'm just going to go ahead and sign in. This is a clean account. I'm going to use an account that I've set up for the past for know-how. It's creatively known as Own Me KH. And yeah, you can go ahead and own this. I keep nothing in it and I change the passwords. But if you could catch me before this actually airs, then...
That's pretty impressive.
Good on you. Yeah. Good on you. So I'm going to go ahead and log in on this one. And what it's going to allow me to do is I can now go into my account. So if I click that little icon in the upper right-hand corner and go here, it's going to bring up a menu. And in the menu is Sign In and Security. Now, what you want to do is click on this one that says signing into Google. There you go. And this is now going to allow me to change my settings. So right now, two-step verification or two-factor authentication is turned off. We're going to turn that on. But first, here's a lesson we learned from our good friend Jason Howell.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do this,
yes,
before you do it, you need to make sure that your recovery email and your recovery phone are actually usable. What Jason did is... His recovery phone was actually a Google Voice number.
Right.
So when he turned on two-factor authentication, it sent the verification to his Google Voice number.
But he couldn't access his
Google Voice. So don't do that. Make sure it's actually going to some place where you can get it. Also,
it was an incredible like security catch 22.
Yeah. It was. But I mean, just don't forward it to a Google thing. When you turn on two-factor authentication, it's going to affect everything that runs through Google's authentication service. So if it's a Google service, you're going to need the verification in order to get in. Make sure that the verification isn't going there.
Yep.
Does it make sense?
Makes sense to me.
Okay. So I got my recovery email. It's going to ownme@thetechstop.net. The recovery phone, that's a little different. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and go into two-step verification. And it's going to give you the quick get started. And yes, it's adding an extra layer of security. It's going to have you log in a couple of times. Thankfully, I have mine saved in. Now, I don't care if you use this because this is a burner phone, folks. But I'm going to 707-790-7866.
I thought you were going to have me blur this out.
No, I just, no. I'm sorry for whoever gets this number after I'm done with it. Really sorry, but bro, you got to admit, from our perspective, it's pretty funny.
It's for the sacrifice of knowledge. Yeah.
Thank you on behalf of science.
Thank you for science and security. So that's the number I'm going to be sending it to. Now, this is going to make sure that it actually works. So, Alex, if you go to my phone, I've already received a verification. Oh, I got to turn that way
turn down that brightness. Greasy fingers.
There we go. Okay, so I've received a Google verification code, and it's 243748. I'm okay with showing you that because that's going to change every time. That's not a static number.
Yeah. That's every time you sign out or sign in, right?
Precisely. Yeah. So I'm going to enter 243748, and there we go. All right, so now I get the option to turn on. And boom, everything that is connected to my Google authentication services will now require me to verify through that second factor. So in other words, if I want to log into Google Groups, if I want to log into, Google Plus, if I want to log into YouTube, if I want to log into, do they still
Google Calendar, Hangouts, yeah.
Any of that.
Else is gone, but Google Photos.
Precisely. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. After you log in the first time and you've authenticated that as a trusted device, you won't have to do it again.
Right.
Because it'll recognize your laptop or your phone or Chromebook.
I think you can do, you tell it, remember this device for 30 days.
Yeah. And then it'll expire.
Because you do want it to eventually expire. And actually, I'm going to show you a way to expire that on a regular basis. Because what, like, for example, every time I go to a conference, the first thing I do when we finish and I get back to my hotel room or my house, I delete all trusted devices.
Yeah.
It's just, it's, you know, you just get used to cycling everything out because eventually that pile of trusted devices gets a lot bigger than you want it to be.
Yes.
Okay. So two-factor authentication is turned on now, which means I'm going to need that verification of this phone every time I want to log in. Now, here's the question I always get from people who are worried about turning on multi-factor authentication, which is, well, what happens if I lose my phone? Or what happens if I'm out of connection? I can't get a signal. Then does that mean I'm locked out? Not necessarily. There's some wonderful options here that you can play with. Now, the first one we want to play with is backup codes. You're going to like this one. So backup codes, what it allows me to do is to actually set up these unique random-generated numbers. I can print them or I can save them to a device. There's 10 every time I click this button. These will always work, but they'll work once. So,
They're burner codes.
Exactly. They're burner codes. Now, here's the cool thing. If I hit get new codes, it deletes the old set. So let's say I lose my set of burner codes. They can't do anything unless they also have my username and password, but I can always do this, and suddenly those codes are invalid.
Wow.
So that's why I have no problem showing this to the audience, because I'm going to do this again right after we're done. None of these numbers will be valid. But the cool thing is I can have either like on a USB drive, or I could have in a printout in my wallet, or printout in my shoe, wherever I'm going to hide it. And I will always have a way to verify, even if I lose my phone or don't have connectivity.
Yeah, just don't get it tattooed on your arm or something like that.
Unless you have a way to, like, delete.
And black it out when you're done with them. Yeah.
just all the way up and down your arm. So, yeah, definitely use the backup codes. It's one of the coolest features. And I'm glad they implemented that, because I don't think Facebook does that. They don't have burner codes.
No, unfortunately not.
Yeah. There is another thing here, and this works on both iOS and on Android. It's the Authenticator app. So you can download an app for your phone. I have mine right here, Authenticator. And what this allows me to do is it allows me to even if the phone is offline, so it has no connectivity, it will still, because it has all of my hashes, it will be able to generate a unique code for me to log in. That's something else that you can turn on. I don't use that as often as I do like the burner codes. The burner codes are still number one for me.
I am now installing that because I did not have that before.
Yeah, that app is really, really great.
Yeah, and remember, it works even if you're offline. So you don't have to have any connectivity whatsoever. It just knows, because it has your hash, it knows what the next one in the sequence should be. Backup phone, that's self-explanatory. If you lose your phone, you can actually have it send your verification to another phone.
And this is a great thing if you're using a Google Voice number, but then you have an actual phone, the Google Voice just forwards things on. Mm-hmm. This is the place to put either that second phone number or whatever it may be.
Yeah. One thing, don't forward to a phone you don't secure. I think that should be self-explanatory, but evidently it was
good
not.
Good to say.
It's you know, there are no stupid questions here. You should definitely throw that out.
My dad was forwarding his backup phone to my mom's phone. I'm like, you know, that's no longer safe then, right? just say
what's the problem, Bobby?
Mom's phone's not locked at all. Anyone can pick it up. And never mind. All right. And this one I really like. Add security key. So what I can do is I can create a dongle. It's an encrypted dongle. So it's not like someone can copy the data off. Mm-hmm. But it stores a hash on that key. And when I authenticate, it's going to check for it.
Oh, cool. Where do you get the key?
It's just a USB drive.
Yeah, you can buy them on Amazon. Yep. They're like $8.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, if Amazon supported two-factor, maybe I'd get one.
Precisely. Right? Right. It's kind of sad. And then the last bit that you're going to want to know is this. Devices you trust. So every time I log in with an authenticator, because it doesn't want to annoy me, it's going to say, okay, this laptop is now trusted for that account. This phone is now trusted for that account.
Right.
We've all been in a place where we've logged in on a computer that's not ours.
Yep.
And you may have forgotten to log back out. Well, you don't have to. If you hit revoke all, what this will do is it will wipe everything. So everything is now considered an untrusted device, and it will require the authentication once again. Which, by the way, anytime I find suspicious activity, this is I'll do this, mm-hmm. and I won't log in, and I'll just wait. If a verification request shows up on my phone, I know someone else has my credentials.
Okay, and then what do you do from there?
And I just change the username and password.
Yeah.
Or change the password so they don't even have that part.
Well, so we've talked about the two-factor authentication, but this is all with the idea, too, that you might be using a password manager to, like, yeah. long passwords, different password for every site that you go to. And then even if your password manager gets owned, the password that is used for your Google account, you still have to have your phone. They would have to have your phone, your password, and the access to your password manager.
Yeah. And access to get into your phone because your yep. phone's going to be secured, right. too, yep. right?
So we're talking layers of security.
Yeah, and this is not bulletproof by any means because I can intercept text messages. I have the equipment to do that at home.
Right.
Especially if I can do something like downgrade them to a 2G connection.
Are you talking about a stingray? That maybe
yeah,
the
maybe. A little stinger.
Yeah.
if I can do that, then scraping off the text messages is trivial.
Yeah.
But you're not trying to have bulletproof security. You're trying to have security that's high enough that people go, it's not worth it.
Yeah, you don't want to be the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we should call this. This episode is sponsored by Low Hanging Fruit.
Yeah.
Like every episode.
It kind of comes down to, are you going to be hacker bait or not?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is simple stuff, mm-hmm. but it seems like common sense. But the thing is that it's just kind of enough effort that a lot of people just don't take the time to do it.
Yeah.
You know? And the difference between, you know, whether or not you turn on two-factor authentication or not is the difference between whether someone has your login and your password and can get into all of your accounts or not, right? Yeah. And the sad truth is most of us are using the same passwords everywhere, one password everywhere, maybe a couple of them, slight variations.
Little variant, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's where the password manager comes in. So all these things really do fit together, and if you're doing them enough, like you said earlier, it comes down to kind of building good habits.
Yeah, and all it takes is one time for someone to get into your account and, you know, get, what was it, the iCloud attack? Yeah. That you know, all your photos get taken, yeah. or then, like, remote deletion of stuff. Yeah. Just be safe.
Just, yeah, exactly. And I think this entire conversation is about doing the things that you know you should do. Everyone knows they should do this, right? I mean, even if you're a noob to the internet, you've heard about multi-factor authentication. You've heard people tell you to pick strong passwords, but we don't do it because it takes effort.
Right.
Well, we're in the effort generation now. At least do this. Protect yourself a little bit so that your account isn't used to attack my account.
And it's quick now. I think when I first signed up for two-factor authentication, you had to wait like a little bit for the text message.
It's
to
immediate.
Get. Sometimes I hit the button to sign in, and then I like as soon as I reach for my phone, it's there. And I kind of have a contest with myself to try and enter in the number before my screen goes dark, which is another tip. If you don't want someone to see the code when it comes in, you can disable like don't show content right. on that notification. Which is something to think about if you can read someone's phone by just turning it on.
If you want to have fun, go to DEF CON and sit in the social engineering village.
Oh yeah,
because they're really good about showing you how they do it. And they're like, well, this is how I would get into your device,
right?
And there's a couple of gurus in there. I love these guys. They never agree to be on tape because this is what they do for a living, and anonymity is part of it. But they're fantastically good. They know all the weak spots of all the different services, and they're good about exploiting it.
Usually the weak spot is the human.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, when we come back, this is good. This is a nice start. You definitely should turn on multi-factor authentication. But Nag here is going to show you an app or two that you should be using because, you know, that program you like for text messaging? Yeah, it's insecure. Just know that. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a moment for these messages. Folks, here at KnowHow, you know that we are all about the maker. We're all about the builder. We're all about knowing how things work, and we're all about the ability to make them even better, which is why we're so happy to have iFixit as a sponsor of KnowHow. Now, you know iFixit. They are the spot, not just for the best tools, for the best parts, for the best knowledge base, but for our community of makers and DIYers who understand what you're trying to do, which is exactly what iFixit does for you. iFixit has more than 22,000 free repair guides, 90,000 troubleshooting solutions, and those good people at iFixit are experts in consumer electronics repair. You've seen their teardowns. They get in there and they design the tools that they want to be able to open up that latest iDevice or that latest Android phone without destroying the surface, without destroying the case. They've created this. It's a completely reimagined kit. This is their ProTech toolkit. It's just as rugged and portable as before, but they've taken your feedback and integrated it into a next generation product. It's got a durable canvas case. It's got hand selected high quality steel bits, a custom anodized aluminum driver handle, a 64-bit driver kit, precision ESD safe tweezers, including a pair of reverse tweezers, a wide variety of plastic opening tools and picks to safely work on tablets and smartphones alike. They've also got a suction cup for display assembly removal, which I used when I tore apart Leo's Surface Studio, as well as a metal spudger and iFixit's own rubber-handed Jimmy Pry tool. The ProTech Toolkit is the last precision toolkit that you'll ever need, and that's why they've backed it by a lifetime guarantee. If you want the perfect gift, you owe it to yourself to try iFixit. The people at iFixit never stop repairing, and with this toolkit under your belt, you won't either. Head over to iFixit.com/twit and use the code KNOWHOW at checkout to save $5 on your purchase of $10 or more. Even if you don't buy anything, you can still use their free repair guides, troubleshooting answer forms, and other educational resources on their website anytime your tech has an accident. That's iFixit, tools for life. And we thank iFixit for their support of KNOWHOW. All right, let's get back to the action. Nog, I am a fan of Hangouts. I've been using it for a long time. I know it's one of these products that could have been so good if Google hadn't kept shifting the focus of what
they
it was supposed
to be.
They
would just let it be.
Just let it be.
Gosh.
I need to move away and I need to use something that's secure because
yes,
I know
you do.
I know my SMS is not.
Hangouts is not secure.
No, it's not.
Okay, why do you use Hangouts? Probably because it's in Gmail and because all your friends are still using it. They just won't let it die, right?
Exactly.
Right? Well, Hangouts is like most messaging apps out there. It doesn't offer what's called end-to-end encryption. It does encrypt messages in transit. Now, what that means is that when, say that we're messaging on Hangouts, when I'm sending you a message on Hangouts, as it's being transmitted over the internet, Google encrypts it then as it's passing through so that if it's intercepted, ideally no one could actually decipher it and unlock it and see the messages that we're sending back and forth, you know, the really bad mom jokes or something that we're sending back and forth. But once it shows up for either one of us, then it's on Google servers because then it's delivered to us. And at that point, it is not encrypted. It's no longer encrypted. Now, that is not what you want at all. The reason why you don't want that, it's pretty straightforward. Basically, if anyone was able to break into the service provider's servers, they could see all the messages and all the content that we're sharing with one another. Or if the government intercepted stuff or broke into those servers or just asked a company to give them all of the data and the tech company might do so, generally without us even knowing whether they do or not, then all of that data and information, all that messages, that stuff would be shared as well. So what you want to look for is what's called end-to-end encryption. And sadly, there's only a few apps that really offer this. The best ones, the apps you should be moving to from Hangouts is WhatsApp and Signal. Now, those two apps use what's called the OpenWhisper protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an end-to-end encryption protocol. And it's out there. It's open source. And hackers regularly basically try to find holes in it, try to get around the encryption. And so far, that hasn't happened or occurred.
Right. There was a story a while back about... Oh, they've broken the protocol. They didn't.
They did not.
What happened was they actually figured out a way to break into the client. They didn't break the encryption. They didn't break the protocol. But it's like, well, if someone can physically have your laptop, then a lot of your encryption methods kind of fall away.
Exactly. And that's an important distinction to make. This is considered basically the gold standard of end-to-end encryption. Now, if WhatsApp is pretty great because you can actually do voice calls, you can do video chats, we can share photos, we can even share Snapchat style ephemeral messages. Signal is much more stripped down. It's just basically text. There's not a lot going on there. But those are the two best choices you can make. Another option if you are an iPhone user is iMessage. Now, Apple has its own encryption technology. It is end-to-end, but they don't basically let the world
else play.
Yeah, see their technology and poke holes in it. So a lot of security experts who I've spoken with over the last few years about this, because it's something I've reported on a ton, really question whether or not it is as good as what WhatsApp and Signal are using.
Well, it's security through obscurity.
Exactly.
We think they've done a good job, but because they're not letting anyone else speak,
we don't
at the code,
really know.
Right. It could be absolutely horrible, and it's just the fact that it's only on iOS devices that it works well.
Yeah.
Versus Signal and WhatsApp, which is anyone can kick the tires. You can look at how they wrote it, and if you can figure out how to break the algorithms that they're using for the encryption, then you should take it upon yourself to report it back to them so that they can fix it.
Exactly.
There's nothing like that in the iOS side.
Exactly. Putting it out there for everyone to see is simply more confidence inspiring.
Yeah.
And it's the better way to go. But I bring up iMessage, and this is also the same encryption technology that they use on FaceTime. I bring this up because if you have an iPhone, there's no excuse for you to not be using an end-to-end encryption app or messaging service or, you know, call or video chat service or anything like that. This is what you should be using. Viber and Wickr also have end-to-end encryption. Now, most don't. Most do what is called in-transit encryption. And that's what Google Hangouts uses. Now, interestingly enough, Google has been trying to pivot Hangouts into an enterprise messaging app. Yep. And they've been trying to get consumers to use what's called Google Allo. And then they've added messaging features into the Google Voice app. It's a total mess.
And they're stripping SMS out of Hangouts, which I think that will finally kill it. That will because I'm like, well, if I can't text people from Hangouts, there's no reason for it to stay on
you
my
know,
phone.
I kind of hope you're right, because with people still holding on to Hangouts, it's never going to pivot into an enterprise-only app, and it's always going to be this kind of middle child. And you know, we really should just let Hangouts die. It's time. But if you are going to use Google Allo, and the only reason really why I would think you might want to is because you can interact with the Google Assistant, basically their voice AI. If you're going to use that, you need to really take my word here. Turn on a secret mode here. Now, if you go into the general settings of the app, we can see it if right here. There is an incognito chat mode, and basically you just go into the general settings. What is the right way to hold it there?
A little further.
Yeah. And you basically just see these, like, you know, little radio buttons here, and then you just hit the switch for incognito chat. And then you will have end-to-end encryption on specific chats. It won't be on all your conversations, but I can start an incognito chat with my friends. And if you do that, you will have end-to-end encryption for that specific conversation. What you won't have if you do that is the Google Assistant. So you won't be able to interact with it to tell you the weather, jokes, sports scores, or whatever it is that you want to look up. Now, the reason why companies like Google and Facebook and Snapchat and Skype and WeChat and HipChat and Slack and Line and KakaoTalk and all these companies don't have end-to-end encryption at all, or maybe it's a secret mode and it's not turned on by default, is because they need to decrypt your messages so they can read them and they can offer you the benefits that are afforded by chatbots and Facebook Messenger or talking to the Google Assistant AI. Mm-hmm. Now, if those benefits actually outweigh you giving up your privacy in the process, that's something you have to answer for yourself. So far, in my personal opinion, all the AI options out there kind of stink. But, you know, I am an early adopter and I'm a curious guy and I'm a tech journalist and I like to play with all that stuff too and see where it's all going. So, you know, give yourself the option, I guess. But at the same time, if I have a really important conversation, if I'm saying something that really matters to me or sharing some sensitive information, whether it's a document or, you know, a picture or whatever, I'm not going to be using these apps. Facebook Messenger also has a secret mode where you can turn on the end-to-end encryption. Snapchat doesn't offer anything of the sort. Skype doesn't offer anything of the sort. WeChat, HipChat, and Slack also, they're just end-to-end, just in transit and no end-to-end
it's
options.
For a reason, because that's how they're going to monetize it.
Exactly.
It's just like Google wants to be able to see what you're searching for so that they can offer advertisers a better chance of actually getting to customers who will buy their products. Well, with Skype, and I remember this was a big deal maybe a year ago, when they realized Skype was prefetching links that you put in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, why are you doing that? No, there's no reason for you to do that. You're using my bandwidth and you're spying on me.
Yep.
Now, Microsoft's explanation was actually, it was pretty good. They're like, look, this is how we're going to monetize Skype. We're actually going to be able to count up which companies are getting heat, et cetera, which made sense from their perspective. But from my perspective,
is it invasion?
No.
Yeah.
No, this is a private conversation.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to be fighting up against. In fact, this is one of those areas in which I would say if you find a company, a reputable company that charges you, I would take that over a company that offers it for free. Because if they're offering it for free, they need to make their money
somewhere.
You're
the product, isn't
it? You're the product.
Yeah,
and you know, that's something that a lot of people have questions about with WhatsApp because they are owned by Facebook. And in both with Facebook Messenger and now the direct messaging inside of Instagram, we're seeing that Facebook is looking for ways to engage and looking for ways to monetize. And that might be ads showing up. That might be, scanning your messages to offer you those chat bots, which are going to be trying to pitch you things and sell you things. Now, WhatsApp so far has stayed out of this. They don't have any advertising, and they say that they're going to keep their user data separate from Facebook. But as we've seen over the last few decades worth of technology companies and how they act, these things can change, and these companies reserve the right to change those approaches. So don't be surprised if it ever did happen. So far, WhatsApp has been successful in making privacy and security kind of a hallmark feature of what it's offering. And this is something that Apple touts very highly in their marketing as well. But, really the apps that you choose are essentially your trip to the ballot box telling these companies whether or not you care about these things.
Right.
And it's really tempting to just spend all day on Facebook Messenger because that's where your buddies are at. Mm-hmm. But this is why...
That is not tempting to me at
all. Exactly. This is why I think you need to go to your friends and you need to tell them what's up. You need to tell them, what end-to-end encryption is, why it matters. You need to tell them what two-factor is, why it matters.
Yeah. Your business card should have your Signal.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, it's important to understand the compromise you're making with some of these apps. Like with me, I use Allo, but I only use it with a couple of people, and it's because I want that quick response of like, it knows what the text I got, and I just want to say, yes, that's great, or no, don't do that. But when I'm looking to go on a trip or something like that, I don't want to get, the information of, oh, you're traveling to so-and-so place? Like, here's some ads. Oh, look at these great deals that you might get. I'll use something else that Signal or whatever, just because I don't want to be targeted like that. So just understanding how to use the programs, just navigating like between the chat messaging that you have. I mean, it would be great if they were like WhatsApp or Signal.
I should mention that this is going to be in a future personal security episode, but a personal experience. I use a burner phone going international, and that's because the new laws that are in place means I have to open up my device or they can confiscate it from me. But you can't just take a brand new phone and take it across the border because they'll look at it, they'll go, this is not your phone.
So you've got to make it look like you use it also.
And one of the apps that absolutely draws their attention is Signal or WhatsApp. If they see that on there, they will demand you log into your account, which it's annoying. So I'm not saying to do anything illegal here, but if you are going to be doing the burner phone technique, what you need to do is have a couple of accounts like Hangouts that are loaded up and have a few conversations just so that it looks like there's been some motion on it. That way you can give it something to them and they'll be happy. And then
because a clean slate is also a red flag.
Suspicious. It's super, super.
I just bought this phone. It's 2 years old.
I had it loaded up on an old Samsung Galaxy S3 I gave it to him and like he spent 3 minutes on it and goes, where's your real phone?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I don't have it with me. He goes, no, where's the phone you normally use? I'm like, I didn't bring that with me.
Yeah.
And he goes, why didn't you bring it with me? It was because you were going to do this.
Yeah.
Man, and he goes, you realize I could detain you for questioning. I'm like, it's happened before. Go ahead, man.
Yeah. It's sad that we have to think like that and be that paranoid, but that's just the reality of what's going on.
Yeah. Well, they say, do you know why I stopped you? And I'll say, it's because I'm brown.
I said that. It didn't work for me, though. Yeah, I just got me in more trouble.
I wonder why.
There are two more apps that I want to mention. BitTorrent Bleep is a really interesting option. And what it does is it relies on basically peer-to-peer messaging. If both people are online, it will create an encrypted tunnel between those two devices. It sends a message. So there's no servers And thus, there's no end-to-end encryption necessary.
What if they're not online, though?
If they're not online, what it actually does is it creates a unique set of randomly generated encrypted keys, and it will keep the message private until that person comes online.
That's pretty cool.
So it basically essentially offers what is like end-to-end encryption, but since it's peer-to-peer, there are no servers involved. So it's a really compelling option, very interesting. But there's one more app that I think everyone should steer clear of, and that is Telegram. The reason being is that they do use an end-to-end encryption method. Like Apple, theirs is proprietary, their technology. But security experts for years have been saying that their end-to-end encryption technology is shoddy.
It leaks.
And that it leaks metadata and that people are able to actually break in and see messages. So, you know, not all end-to-end encryption is created equal. Not all messaging apps are created equal. And for those reasons, until Telegram, you know, really comes out and does like WhatsApp and Signal and lets people kick the tires, this is an app that you really should steer clear of, despite the really great marketing and the terms you're looking for, such as end-to-end encryption.
So, Nog, for you, it's really Signal or WhatsApp. I mean, that's don't even think of anything else. Start with those two.
Yeah, I'd really say start with those two. And you know, luckily, a lot of people do use WhatsApp. So you might even find that some of your friends are already on there if they aren't. I definitely with a lot of my friends, when I've suggested it to them, they've been surprised at how many friends and family members are already on that app. You know, and this, I think this comes back down to creating good habits, as we were talking about earlier. Switching over a new messaging app seems like kind of a pain in the butt. But if you're going to be embracing something like Google Allo, which is new, and you're like, hey, shiny AI, I get to talk with it, whatever, whatever, then you're going to have to basically be playing that salesman, saleswoman, and getting all your friends to come over with you. I think it's worth taking the time and consideration and thinking about whether or not you want to advocate for your friends to try something that's new and shiny or something that is actually taking privacy and security serious. iMessage does offer some predictive, word completion and stuff like that. They're not offering the response prediction that Allo offers, but even there, without even trying, you have an option for end-to-end encryption. So yeah, I really think it comes down to WhatsApp, Signal, and iMessage, particularly WhatsApp and Signal.
Fantastic. Nate, cool. Thank you so very much. So you've got two recommendations so far. First, turn on two-factor authentication. Secondly, find a secure way to communicate with your friends and family. Next up, Brian, you want to talk to us about Tor. Now, we covered Tor last week, but it was hardware.
It was hardware, and so say you don't have a Raspberry Pi, but you want to play with Tor, see how it would work with some of the sites that you might visit, see what some of the compromises might be, but without having, you know, the hill to climb or, you know, the obstacles to overcome to build your own Raspberry Pi Tor.
Well, we're going to be getting to that in just a second. But first, these messages.
Previously on Twit.
Mozzaleo.
Oh, Mozzaleo.
Apple is never going to do a mozza cracker filter. It would be too
Tech news today.
Google's artificial intelligence is going to make you the Picasso of clip art. When using the AutoDraw tool, Google's AI will analyze the image being drawn with every stroke that you add and update a series of thumbnail images up at the top that it thinks match the item that's being sketched.
It's
a dog.
It's a dog.
Hippopotamus.
Like I said. Oh, a hippo.
Of course it's a hippo.
But they doesn't know it's a hippo, so it's not a good hippo.
The new screensavers.
Today, you're going to be making pancakes.
I am?
With the pancake bot.
Pancake bot, pancake bot, pancake bot.
The prototype was originally made out of Legos. 99% Legos and 1% ketchup bottles.
Twit, it's what's for dinner.
You know, this week, yeah. Google announced that they've developed AI that can sketch like a human being. So I think that might be the next step, that you get, you know, some AI in here and just
AI
see what
pancake
happens.
AI pancake bot.
Hey, pancake bot. Draw dinosaur pancake.
Oh man, can it do
is
that?
Is it moving?
No.
Oh, you guys got version 2.0. Sorry.
Oh no. Yeah.
Welcome back. We're talking personal security with our panel of DIYers and makers, and now it's Cranky Hippo's turn. Cranky Hippo, you've got an easy way for people to play with Tor without actually having to build anything. Now, this is important because in our Google Plus group, there was a user who asked why he wouldn't just use a Tor browser plugin. Mm-hmm. I told him the reason is because if you use something like the Raspberry Pi 3 that we made last week, it encrypts all the traffic coming from your computer. It's in its entirety. A Tor plugin will only encrypt the traffic from that browser session, but it's still a really good way to make sure that you're anonymous.
Right. It's a great way to make sure you're anonymous, and it works. Exactly. And it works on different platforms. So if you go to the torproject.org, you can download a version for Windows, for Mac, and for Linux. And they also make an Android app.
Oh,
but
nice.
If you go to my laptop, Al, so if you go to the website, super easy to just download the browser. It's built off of Firefox, so it's going to look really familiar once you do boot it up.
And actually, let me say really quick, Alex, if you go to my computer, you'll see I have the Wireshark tap set up again. So I'm using that Shark tap that we used last week to tap our Raspberry Pi. This is all the traffic coming from Brian's computer right now. And as you can see, the same test we did last week, if I look for DNS entries, it's going to show me, I can see everything. So even if he's encrypted end to end, I can still see the metadata. I can see what sites his sessions are calling. And down here, like, for example, this is cloudfront.net because it does the decryption. We don't want that. That's leaking out right now. Supposedly, once you start this up, my tap should no longer be able to read that.
Exactly. Because like we had talked about on the last show with HTTPS, it's encrypted. The transmission's encrypted, but the destination isn't. So people could still see what sites I'm visiting. But so I guess I'll close out of Chrome. I'll lose my show notes.
Oh, yeah, by the way, if you are tapping the test, you can't have anything else running because the other stuff will still be generating regular traffic.
But yeah, once you've downloaded it's just an exe file. I guess I don't need to really show you that. But once you've installed it, you'll get an icon, load it up, works just like any other browser. It takes a moment to connect to the network. You can also fiddle with the settings, but it'll work right off the start. And so if you look at it, it looks just like Firefox. It comes with NoScript already installed, which is a plugin
that
stops any JavaScript or anything because Flash from loading right away.
We talked about this yesterday, which is Tor can encrypt your session. It can encrypt the transit. However, if your browser is still reporting who you are, or if your browser is susceptible to scripts that can query for cookies, then you've basically undone all the protection that you just created.
Exactly. I know Steve Gibson has always, whenever he goes on the internet, it's just NoScript is always on. Right. And then also the little spot next to it will show you what Tor nodes that you're connected to on your session. But even just the homepage, you can test the Tor network to make sure that it's working correctly. And so when you go to that page, congratulations, your browser is configured to use for Tor. It gives you a little IP address. And then also I can go up to here now and it'll show me I'm connected France, Hungary, Netherlands. You know, those are the different nodes that I'm going through.
And just for giggles, I'm going to go ahead and start up my packet capture again. And it's going to be able, let's set it clear fill. Or I could shut down the program.
It. Yeah. You'll never
I can just
find
crash
out
the program and that will work really well. Okay. So I am capturing traffic. So as you can see, I'm picking up all the packets from your computer and your browsing session. However, let's do the same test, DNS. And if I look for DNS, give it a second, it's searching through all my packets, boom, nothing.
Right.
Which is what we want because it means not only is your transit encrypted, but I can't tell where you're going to.
Right. And if you go back to my screen, you can see I'm back on twit.tv. Like I was just on there through Chrome and you could definitely see where I was going on the, through your tap.
Right.
But one of the compromises of using Tor just in general is that it's going to be a little bit slower and there's going to be sites that you go to that don't work. And because I'm going through so many different nodes, like if I go to Amazon, if I try to go to Amazon.com or something, it might default to
France.
So it might be Amazon.f.
Which there is Amazon in France.
There might be, websites that you go to that don't
You
load
did a
properly
speed test
stuff.
Before we started. What were you getting?
It was I couldn't get a speed test to work couldn't. Through Tor. Yeah. I mean, when I was just doing it through Chrome, it was like 170 down, like 200 up, which was pretty awesome. But on Tor, it wouldn't even work when I went to the same website to try and do the speed test. I mean, it's acceptable, but I'm not don't torrent through Tor because you're just being a jerk if yeah. you're doing that, and it won't work. But also, if you're using Tor, don't be signing into stuff like that. Don't be opening documents that you
Netflix,
download.
No YouTube.
Because that just defeats the purpose. Yeah. That's basically broadcasting where you're going, what you've done.
Yeah, and not only that, we talked about this last week. It's being responsible. You're using an infrastructure that's been created by your fellow citizens on the internet
yeah.
because they understand the importance of privacy. If you are that guy who is now using up 1,000 times more bandwidth than everybody else, I don't want to create a network for you. I don't want you on my network. You know, be responsible with how you use it. And that is anytime you're transmitting sensitive data, you should be going through Tor. However, there are other times where you can use things like a public VPN.
Right.
I can use a proxy, you know, things that I don't necessarily need to encrypt and anonymize my location. I can use other solutions. We tried to make this clear last week, and unfortunately I saw in the comments maybe that didn't get through. This is not a silver bullet. There is no silver bullet for security. Hopefully you've gotten that from this panel. Turn on two-factor authentication, use a secure messaging app, use Tor when necessary, but it's on you to learn when you use these different tools, because every situation will demand a different way of dealing with it.
Right. And there's a compromise to each of them. You know, yeah. With two-factor, it's the inconvenience yeah. of having to have your device with you and wait for a text message to be able to sign in. But, I mean, what's the alternative is that there's easier access for not just you, but for other people to try and get into your account. And so with the Tor browser, like versus the Raspberry Pi project we did, it's much easier for someone to just download the browser, play around with it, use it, get familiar with it. And also there is, you know, the Android option, which I played with called Orbots, which actually works pretty well too.
Orbot? Like
Orbot.
Mighty Orbot from my childhood?
What's the Mighty Orbot?
The Mighty Orbot. It was.
They had cartoons when you were a kid?
It was a wannabe Voltron. Wow.
I thought it was just like shadow puppets and stuff like that.
We had that machine that you spun around really fast
yeah, exactly.
and it looked like it was animated, right?
Oh.
You just would take those little flip books and just
yeah.
sit there
yeah,
and watch
those. I think it was a kinemascope or something.
Kinemascope.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry, Padre.
I'm sorry. You were saying about the Linux Orbots?
I was saying about Orbot, which will allow you to use Tor on your phone. You can also install, you could use it through Chrome, I mean, when I was using on my phone, but it didn't seem to work that well. So I downloaded OrFox, which is pretty much the same as Firefox on your phone, but just with it also has no script. And I think it's, what is it called? HTTPS Everywhere is built into that browser. And that worked really great too. It was actually a little quicker on my phone than what I was using on my laptop. So, and you can specify if you want to use it with certain apps. I didn't test it out, so I don't know exactly how well it works, but you can drill down and say, like, I want to use Tor when I'm on Instagram or whatever.
We will be doing that probably in Networking 103, because we did have a question in the groups about, well, if I had a network-managed switch, could I have, like, the Raspberry Pi Tor connected and then only send certain types of traffic through it? And that's absolutely possible. Like, I can set policy on my switch at home, because I have an enterprise class, Interasys D2 switch, so that like any DNS requests automatically go to the port that the Raspberry Pi Tor is connected
to. That's smart.
You do need a little higher end equipment. You can't do that on a dumb switch or even like a smart switch. You actually do need a managed switch, but we'll be able to show you how to do that. So ultimately, what you can do if you've got a capable enough network is have policies that will automatically direct, like, Xbox traffic gets the fastest connection
straight
possible.
Straight to the internet.
Yeah, because I don't care if people know where I am, and also I need little lag. Anything that's email, that goes through, you know, that's encrypted all the way.
Yeah.
And you can start setting those policies, and like I said, it allows you to have the best possible security without having to think every situation through every time you do it.
Yeah, and so as far as my part of this project, that's all I can think of. I mean, use it wisely, use multiple forms of security. Like as far as like wrapping up this whole episode, you know, don't just rely on one thing. Like, I'm just going to browse on Tor, but I'm not going to use multi-factor authentication.
Nope. You know, like, it's really kind of a package. It's almost like, I hate to use this phrase, but it's almost like a lifestyle choice. Like you really have to think about this end to end for your life and all the different things that you're doing. I do have a couple questions though. So there is no like Tor browser or Tor option built for iOS, correct?
No, there isn't. Just Android. And my assumption is that's because Android's a lot closer to Linux than iOS. And I don't know. It's probably a lot more restricted to try and build a Tor similar. There might be something similar for iOS, but to get Tor on like an iOS store might be a little bit more difficult.
Might be a little tougher. I do know Firefox Focus is out there and does offer some private browsing. But I just wonder, what do you guys think of Firefox Focus? Is that maybe something people should consider if they're on an iPhone and want some private browsing while also blocking some trackers?
Well, Nate, I know this is your first time on the show, but we're kind of Android users on this show. Yeah. So if you have any iOS questions, that's not really
I haven't played with Focus except for once.
Okay.
Like the very early in the year, and I did not like it. It would crash like every other time I used it.
It does crash a lot, and it doesn't allow you to do multi-tabbed browsing, which is something that the Tor browser does allow you to do on desktops, which is great. You can only view one website at a time on Firefox Focus. I need to play with it a little bit more, but it's definitely something that I think iOS users like me, who I do use Android phones, but my default is an iPhone, should definitely check out.
I did the same test where I ran it through a tap. So I had it connected to an AP that was running through my tap.
Oh, nice.
And it was encrypted, and then suddenly the tunnel broke.
Oh.
And did it warn you?
But no, it just kept going. So it went to clear.
So it allowed you to keep browsing?
Yeah. And I'm like,
and then
that's no bueno. That's why when we built the Raspberry Pi Tor last week, we set it up so that if the tunnel breaks, it stops until it can reestablish it. I don't know if it was the way that the demo unit I was playing with was set up, but when the encryption broke, it just said, I guess I'm just going to go over
just
the cellular
keep
connection
going.
Now.
Yeah.
Yay!
Not good.
No, that wasn't.
Well what other things should people who are using the Tor browser look out for? You know, those folks who are giving this a shot for the first time. I mean, there are going to be, like you said, some websites that you visit that just won't work because they're dependent on JavaScript or plugins that are leaky and will identify you, right?
Right. I mean, things to avoid are probably streaming sites, like anything that's pushing a lot of bandwidth, so like Netflix, YouTube, it's not great for that. If you just want to anonymously, it's been a long day. go on Reddit or, you know, Skyscanner or something like that to search flights and stuff. That's like a great idea for that.
But like flash videos is a no-no.
No.
All sorts of stuff like that. Right?
No, as soon as you start enabling browser plugins or you disable NoScript, then you basically are compromising yourself to the point where it's like... Yeah.
It's the same thing as like logging into your Google account through Tor. Well, okay, but Google knows it's you now, and now they have proof that you're going through a Tor network. Great. Right. Just don't do that. If you are identifying yourself on the other side of the connection... then why are you going through an anonymous encrypted connection?
Right,
that's
because
just silly.
That's the difference that we've been talking about with HTTPS and Tor, is that your traffic is encrypted on HTTPS, but people can figure out where you're going and where you're coming from. So using both in conjunction, encrypted, and they don't know where you're going. So. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, this was fun. This was a good episode of Personal Security. Hopefully, that's a lot of very useful tips for you to take home. And remember, we want you to share it with your friends and your family, especially those who are maybe a little less tech savvy, maybe who are, as you mentioned, just kind of overwhelmed. They know they should be more secure, but they don't know how. Yeah. Three super easy ways for you to be more secure.
Oh, man, we should have done the mom test, though. Like, I feel like I could get my mom to do two-factor. I would not tell my mom to use Tor
anything. No way.
But what about you guys? What would you recommend
parents? I would definitely turn on. I've already turned on two-factor authentication for my parents.
But your dad was sending the messages to your mom's phone.
But okay, baby steps. I don't know if I could get them to use Signal though, because both my mom and my dad, they think Facebook Messenger is texting. And I've been saying stop that.
Yeah.
So are they? I have folks in my family. I'm not going to name names. Don't want to shame anybody, but who send text messages, straight up SMS, with still like a little, like, you know, Dear Nate, comma, you know, like turn, like,
and then they sign it at the bottom, you don't know who it's from.
so that can be kind of tough. The one thing that I've found is when you're trying to bring people over who are in your family, who might not be as tech savvy and who don't see the distinction between a text message, an email, any other form of writing, is just, it doesn't matter. The style doesn't matter. Just be there. If you're in that app and this is a way for them to connect with you, they're there because they want to talk to you.
Yeah,
and they like you, and they want to communicate with you. So that's a good way to bring people.
I think we're all pretty used to being the IT in our families anyway. So
I'm going to go off the rails here a little bit and just say I have an aunt, a tita,
yeah,
who I love dearly, but she doesn't understand tech to save her life. She left me a voicemail message, which is unique because no one leaves me voicemail. No one calls me anymore. Mm. But you could tell. She thought it was like the old style answering machine on the kitchen counter because she's hello,
are you there?
Are you hello? Are you there?
That is adorable. Oh,
okay, I guess you're out. Okay, this is Tita. Aww. Call me back. And then she gave me her phone number. I'm like, wow, you don't understand any of this tech.
To be fair, your voicemail is confusing because you say, hey, what's up?
I did that. The first phone I got, I had just graduated high school. I was 18. That's what I did. That was my voicemail to psych people out like I was answering the phone and I wasn't. And you're doing that today.
No, that is awesome.
Hello? Like you just woke up.
Just silent.
Oh, I don't feel so good. I can't hear you so well. Can you talk louder?
Leave a message.
Fooled you. Archer.
Folks, we know this was a lot of information, but if you want any of it, you don't have to copy down as we're speaking. We're going to be putting all these links into our show notes. Brian, where do they find those?
Oh, you can find them at the usual spot, twit.tv/KH, and you'll also find a handy way to subscribe to the show and download, which you will want to do because these are multi-part episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like you're going to have to scroll back in this one. Download this episode, re-listen to Nate's very well said messaging apps and suggestions. And also, that's not the only place you can find us.
No, though. You're going to find us on the social. Specifically, you're going to find us in Google+. It is the most active group we have here at Twit. And Google+ is actually, it's now that a lot of people have left it, it's become a really good place for solid communications and conversations.
And you've always moderated the group too, so that helps.
Yeah. And by the way, we did add a little extra something. If you go to Google+ and look for Know How, you can request to join. Very short approval processes just to keep all the spam accounts out, which by the way, they do come in sometimes, but their messages always get flagged and they get banned. So eventually they get the message of it's not worth it to come into the group if you're just going to spam us.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're in, you get access to almost 11,000 Kitas. That's our know-it-alls. These are the people who you can ask questions of, or perhaps if you're an expert, you can answer some questions. In any case, come in. Show us pictures of your projects. Show us what you're doing. Show us a project that we did that you did better, and we'll put it here on the show.
That's right. And before we get to our Twitter handles, I just want to say, Nate, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, great my job. Pleasure. It's fun to geek out with you guys.
Totally.
I definitely learned some new things, and I'm going to be putting some of this into action myself. And, you know, hopefully I can join you all later and geek out on some more good stuff.
Oh, there's going to be a lot.
Where do people find you, though?
So I'm on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or any of them, at NateOG. The same spot. I am also on Google+, and I think I have some of those fake followers. I have more than 107,000 followers, and I'm
You're
sure
just
that
popular.
Some of them might not be real people. Just a couple.
Well, you also do other podcasts too, right?
Oh yeah. I'm creating a podcast weekly with a couple friends called Buzzkill, and it's available on basically every podcast service: iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, all that good stuff. I'm doing that with Brian Chen from the New York Times
and
Mark Million from Bloomberg, a couple buddies of mine. We talked tech, politics, and pop culture in 30 minutes or less.
And we're slowly rotating you into more and more shows here on Twit TV. In fact, I've heard that you might be working with a very cranky hippo at sometime in the near future.
That could happen.
We're just going to be very vague and say stuff like that.
It'll happen eventually. Yeah.
Hopefully you'll be seeing a little bit more of me.
But don't forget, you can find Brian on Twitter at twitter.com/cranky_hippo. You definitely want to check him out because on the weekends, you do this thing. I've heard about it. I've never actually done it called going outside. So you go outside.
Yeah, I go dark for a while.
You see sky and stuff and sun.
I wasn't sure where you're going to go with that, because sometimes when you do that, you're like, oh yeah, send all your viewer mail to Brian and he'll mail you back, which I have not mailed a letter in 15 years. When mailing letters was a thing, I never mailed letters. But yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you'll see plenty of hippo gifs and corgi gifs. And yeah, we usually have a good back and forth on there. But
yeah. And you can find me at twitter.com. Wow, I'm having problems with the word. But find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. There you'll be able to find what I'm doing when I'm not at the TwitTV studios. Oh, and by the way, we do have one more member of our crew.
This is the fourth member of the
crew? He's a fourth member of the crew now. He's been working hard because we're working late tonight. And you know what?
Let's just keep talking.
I realize the longer I talk, the more upset he gets. I can see him back there. He's just getting just more and more irritated. But folks, you're going to be able to find him. By the way, we call him Al.
Brian calls me Al.
Wait. What is it?
I'm not even trying it.
How do you pronounce it?
Pronounced Alex. Thank you.
But you're going to find him at twitter.com/ANELF3. Follow him, and he'll probably share a scotch with you.
It's true. Yeah.
Please don't.
Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go tour it. Go tour it up. I think that's what I said on the last one.
That's what you said on the last one.